Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Today is October 28, 2015. The markets were up today. The Dow closing at 17,779, the NASDAQ at 5095, and the S&P at 2090. Last week, we had Judith Harris on the show talking about estate planning and the essentials of doing so, as it was Estate Planning Awareness Week. So I want to remind folks, if you are interested in catching that show and you missed it, you can go online at yourfinancialchoices.com or wdiy.org and search for the show. Once that's posted, I'm not sure it's posted yet, but it will be soon, and listen to the show. So we want to raise estate planning awareness for everyone and make sure that you have your proper estate planning documents. Tonight, we are talking about what's new for investment accounts and other related information. It's going to be an interesting show, so I hope you stay tuned. We are live so that you can ask questions. You can call in and talk either live on air or off air, whatever's more comfortable for you. Judy Ann is in the studio with us this evening. She'd answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while we do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and we will do our best to answer them. The number this evening is 610-758-8810. An email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. And in fact, right before the show, a question came through. So we'll take a minute a little later in the show to answer that question. And let's start with introducing our guest, Matt Petruzzelli, who is Executive Vice President and Financial Advisor and Chief Operating Officer of Valley National Financial Advisors. Matt brings a wide range of investment and management experience to Valley National, having held positions at Northwestern Mutual, Fidelity Investments, and HSBC Bank, after having attended our local Lehigh University. So I want to also mention that we heard about the accident last night at Lehigh University, and we hope everyone does well and recovers from any injuries they had. That was right near our office, so I was very sensitive to that. And Matt, being a Lehigh University grad, I thought that we should mention that as well. So welcome to the show, Matt.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
How many times? It's been several times now, I think.
This is my fourth show.
Okay, here we go. So
in 5 years.
In essence, Matt can run the show by himself tonight. I can take a little vacation here. No, folks, I want you to pay attention tonight, because one of the reasons I asked Matt to come on the show is because he's done a lot at Valley National over the past several years to address the changing technology needs that clients have had, and that technology that is available and out there. So one of the things I realized is we have a very diverse listening audience. We have college students calling and asking us questions. We have retirees calling and asking us questions. And I realized that some are more technologically savvy than others, and it's not necessarily age-based. It could just be comfort level. So I thought we should talk about some of the investment account features that are available out there for folks, whether you are tech savvy or not. Some of the things or ideas Matt might have for items that people should pay attention to when they are doing investment decisions, making investment decisions. Are they setting it and forgetting it? So we want to go through some different features, talking about what you should pay attention to. So when we talk, Matt, about like a traditional kind of investment model with features, not talking about specific investments right now, but what someone should pay attention to when they are looking at kind of the resources available to them when they do decide to go invest.
Yeah, this is a great topic, and I firmly believe, as both an advisor and a chief operating officer, when the investing public looks to invest with a particular firm or company or person, or if they choose to do it with them, you know, by themselves, it should be like shopping for a car. It should be a fully customizable experience, right? There are some firms that offer just standard features, and there are some firms that offer kind of the fully loaded version. What's been neat over the last 5 to 7 years is technology and the birth of all this new technology has allowed for a lot of the high-end features to become more standard. So I think if you've been investing with a firm for 10 years, you may have new features available to you that you didn't realize were previously there. So that's really an exciting trend and new topic that's been popping up.
So, for example, some people may have signed up with a firm 10 years ago and they get their paper statements in the mail mm-hmm. every month. Sometimes they might get, if they have a few accounts, they might get a few statements, a few packets of mail.
Mm-hmm.
So, over time, people will not realize that they could have other options to paper. And the other question that we quite often get from people is, what do I do with all of this paper? What's important? What's not important?
Yeah. By law, and you could tell by the disclosure before the show, the investment business is a highly regulated business. And just by the nature of having an investment account, you're going to get a lot of paper or email, depending on how you set your preferences. So from a high level, now you have the choice with most investment companies that you can either choose to get all of your statements, trade confirmations, prospectuses, proxies. You can get all of those via email, which is fantastic if you're tech savvy. Cuts down on the amount of mail that you have. Or you can continue to get that via paper. It's really important for people to know that by law, you should be receiving at least a quarterly statement from your investment provider. Okay, I would say 9 out of 10 companies provide that statement monthly. And you want to keep that statement. That's the record of all the account activity that you have. You probably want to keep about 6 months to 12 months of those statements on hand so you can go back and reference anything that may change or if you have questions in the past. Prospectuses are really important. They're probably one of the most annoying things you get in the mail. But investment, mutual funds, ETFs, things like that will, by law, have to give you a prospectus. And that prospectus is going to have the fine print in regards to all the rules, fees, charges, managers, decisions in regards to that particular investment. You might have bought a mutual fund 10 years ago, and by prospectus, that mutual fund objective may have changed or its fee structure may have changed. So you want to make sure that you read through that. You can archive them, and they're actually usually accessible via the internet now. Me personally, I don't really read the email because I can log on and just get them online. They're available and posted online anytime. I kind of throw them away and read them on my own leisure online. Trade confirmations, anytime you make a trade, you want to make sure that you're looking at your trade confirmations. It's going to have the price of the investment that you either bought or sold. It's going to have any related charges to that. You want to make sure that there's no changes in charges or commissions, not up or down, right? 10 years ago, it might have been $50 to buy an investment. Today, it might be $10, but the market may warrant around an average of $8 a trade. So you want to make sure you're always kind of looking at what your investment costs are, and you can do that through your trade confirmations. So it's good to be aware of that. And kind of the final thing is proxies that come in, right? If you own individual stocks, there's usually corporate actions. Recently, GE, Lori, is spinning off their capital asset business, their credit business. So if you're not paying attention to your proxies, you may be missing out on board of director decisions and voting decisions. So it's really important to keep track of that. And it's all based on preference. If you want it paper online or both, you can usually set those features up directly through your investment company.
So you can get the prospectuses online as well? They
yes.
don't have to come in the mail. Okay. I'm going to talk a little bit more about a few things you said when we come back from our break. Folks, if you have questions, maybe you don't know what a proxy is, a prospectus, what do you do when you get them? We're open for questions. The phone number is 610-758-8810, and we'll be back in a second.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Hi, this is Carmen Twilley Ambar, president of Cedar Crest College, and I want to congratulate WDIY on celebrating 20 years on the air. Cedar Crest College is proud to be partners with WDIY in the support of public radio in the Lehigh Valley. So my favorite program, of course, is Lehigh Valley Discourse, and I want to congratulate WDIY and keep up the great work, guys.
Thank you, John. Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You are listening to Your Financial Choices, and I have with me in the studio this evening Matt Petrozelli, Executive VP and COO of Valley National Financial Advisors. We're talking about options in how you work with your investment accounts. Simple things like paper or email, but we're going to talk a little bit more detail not only about those options, but also what do you have to pay attention to, what do you need to address, how long do you have to keep maybe these papers. So we're going to get into that a little bit more. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and questions are also available to be taken online at yourfinancialchoices.com. And I did have a question come in right before the show, and I already answered it, but Matt, I'm going to read it, and then you can add to it if you'd like. So someone had emailed in and said, "Dear Lori, I changed jobs about 7 years ago and kept my retirement account with my old job's investment firm," which, Matt, we see quite often. People just... it's sometimes easier not to do anything. So she kept it at her old job's investment firm instead of rolling it over into her own IRA. We call that a rollover IRA. It is a well-renowned investment firm, but I am concerned about the cost of using them and would like to switch to a lower-cost investment option like Vanguard. Since I did not roll over at time of job change, will I be penalized heavily to remove the money and reinvest? And what I had said is the only time there would be a tax cost or penalty would be if you took a distribution and did not roll it over into a rollover IRA within 60 days. If you take a distribution before age 59 and a half, unless you have an exception to the early distribution penalty, you would have a 10% penalty on early distribution. Again, only if you kept the money and did not roll it over. Another option is to request distribution paperwork from your former employer and request the check to be payable to the new custodian of the rollover IRA. That way, the check's not payable to you and is considered a trustee-to-trustee transfer, and then it wouldn't be subject to that 60-day provision. There's limits on how often you can do that 60-day little rollover, so you want to make sure you don't do it if you don't need to. 60-day means you take it out as a check, it's payable to you, and you roll it back into an IRA. In lieu of doing that, do it as a trustee-to-trustee transfer. You don't need to worry about the 60 days. So the funds would, in addition, the funds would be sold in the 401k, but there's no tax cost to that either because it's done within the plan and no distribution has been made outright to you. So this was from Grace, and she had asked about being penalized to remove money and reinvest. So I was trying to capture, when we have a question, not a live question, I'm trying to capture where she might have been going. So when she talked about penalized, being penalized, I was thinking, is she thinking from a tax standpoint? Is she thinking from a 10% penalty? There really is no consequence internally as long as she rolls it over to another IRA or does a 60-day rollover. So trustee-to-trustee transfers are really kind of the better way to go. But part of the other interesting fact in her question was she was worried about the costs. She said she was concerned about the cost of using this well-known firm and would like to switch to a lower-cost investment option.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have any comment on that part? Because she wasn't really asking a question about that, but making a comment. And I think,
right,
might there be something else she should think about?
Yeah, we've been talking about investment accounts and investment options. You know, Vanguard, Fidelity, Schwab, these discount, what they call discount brokerage options or lower cost options, are really great for people who are comfortable managing their own investments and utilizing the online tools and online research and 800 numbers that they have. You know, I would caution anybody who's looking to do a low-cost provider to make sure that they do have the knowledge and the capability to do everything they need to do to roll their 401k over, make sure they're ensuring it's a trustee-to-trustee transfer, opening the IRA at that low-cost provider, and then obviously choosing, monitoring, and setting up all the features on the investment account. That's how low-cost providers keep costs low. They cut out a lot of the other features that maybe higher-cost providers have. So if this particular person's looking for some investment guidance or looking for some help navigating the overall investment experience and customizing that, Vanguard may or may not be the best option, but there are lots of different options based on that person's preference.
And just because something is low cost doesn't necessarily mean it's better returns.
Correct, right? I mean, that's the million-dollar question.
Right.
If everything that was low cost was the best return, there'd be no high-cost investment options.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks, Matt. And Grace, I hope that we helped answer your question. Now, we had another caller call in. We had Mary Ellen, and she has asked a question. I have a variable life insurance policy, but I don't pay into it anymore. What can I do with the value that remains in there? Can you take a stab at that, Matt?
Sure. That's a great question. So variable life insurance really has two components to it for people who may not know what that is. It's a permanent life insurance policy that the premiums go to cover the death benefit. So unfortunately, if the insured were to pass, there would be a death benefit that fluctuates variable with the market. In addition, it has a cash value component. So a portion of the premiums that you put in can be invested in a select pool of mutual funds. And over time, hopefully that pool would grow. If that policy is still in force and there is cash value, there are a number of options that policyholders can choose. The first is that they can surrender the policy, which is they no longer want to keep the policy in force, and the insurance company will deem a surrender value for the amount of variable cash that's in the policy. That can be a taxable transaction, so you want to be careful of how much growth you have versus your cost basis. Your insurance company can provide you that amount. You could take that cash and what's called a 1035 exchange, so you could move that to another type of permanent life insurance product, which may be a whole life insurance product or a universal life insurance product. And that cash value will then go towards your future premiums and help support that new policy. Or you can take a loan against the policy. If it's a certain type of variable life insurance policy, you could take a loan and you can pull out a portion of that cash that may be in that policy to keep it in force. You can't pull it all out, but you can pull a portion of that, and the insurance company can run that calculation for you. Or you may be able to pay more premiums into it to grow the death benefit and grow the cash value component. So it's obviously a complex choice. There's numerous things you can do, and the insurance company or the insurance agent would have to look at the policy and let you know what bells and whistles are attached to it.
So, Mary Ellen, this was a great question, as Matt said, and I think he answered it really well. And he mentioned something that I think is really important, that you have to be careful because depending on what you do with that cash value, there could end up being a tax consequence.
Yeah, potentially if you surrender it and just take all of your money out and surrender the policy, there could be a tax consequence.
Where you may not have paid in, you know, the premiums in excess of that cash value.
Right.
Or if you took a loan out, and I think the loan sometimes can end up causing a tax consequence.
The loan value depends on how much cash is in versus premium paid. They won't let you take out a huge loan if you don't have enough premium to support the life insurance component of the policy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were to pass away while there's an outstanding loan, let's say it's a $1 million policy and you've taken out $100,000, the death benefit would just be $900. They typically subtract it. Yeah.
Okay. So, Mary Ellen, just want to make sure that you work with your agent to get enforce illustration or make sure that someone is telling you all of the consequences
right.
of
the
any.
The term would be you'd want to get an enforce ledger. Okay, that should have the surrender value, the cash value, and the death benefit amount, and any loan interest provisions if you had a loan option associated with the policy.
Okay, great question.
Great question.
Love the calls. If folks have questions, we can take calls live on air or off air, as Mary Ellen had done, or online, as Grace had done, at yourfinancialchoices.com, or through the studio at 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We're taking our next break. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And we are back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. And I have in the studio with me this evening, Matt Petrozelli, Executive VP, Financial Advisor, and COO at Valley National Financial Advisors. And Matt has done quite a bit at the firm over the past several years, updating technologies, being aware of the technologies that are out there. And we thought, while we're doing that internally, we should also raise awareness to individuals out there to just kind of maybe do a checkup to see if you are paying attention to what's going on in your own investment accounts. Might you maybe 5 years ago only been comfortable with paper and since have become really tech savvy and have not thought about doing this with your investment accounts? Maybe you're someone who does online bill pay now, but still were afraid to go with online statements. So be aware of what is going on. But Matt had also brought up a few other points that I think was really important to pay attention to. While you might have started working with an investment advisor several years ago, if you don't periodically revisit, you know, what is available to you? What resources is your investment advisor using? What resources do they have as far as research or technology at their hands to help drive costs down for you? You may have missed a few things that could be available, but also could it be that maybe you've stopped paying attention to a number of items, such as Matt had mentioned the trade confirmations, looking at those trade confirmations and seeing if there are commissions or sales charges on there that maybe in the industry today, prices have been driven down, right, Matt? I mean, 15 years ago, commissions or sale or brokerage fees mm-hmm. might have been much higher than they are today.
They were much higher. And based on technology and competition in the market and just ease of execution on trades due to computers and technology and routing at the exchanges, it's drastically reduce the cost.
So it might be a topic of conversation to have if you look at that trade confirm and you see maybe a bigger number than, you know, $10, $20, something like that.
Just something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Want to pay attention and look at that. And then, Matt, with those trade confirmations, so they come in, I get them out of the mailbox.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're online, but let's pretend they're on the mailbox because it's paper that's the problem. So I look at it. Do I have to wait for my statement to make sure it all ties out? Is it going to show up on my statement? What do I do with this trade confirmation after I've kind of reviewed those fees and charges and I'm comfortable with either the sale or the buy? That was I expecting this? Did my, you know, broker call or my advisor tell me about it? Do they have discretion?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how long do I have to keep that trade confirm? What do I do with that paper?
Well, there's no firm and hard rule here, but it's the trade confirmation is the first line of defense for you to review and make sure the trade that you had was executed properly and at the right cost and the right price. It's also going to be on your statement, although the cost of the execution may not be on your statement. And then it's obviously going to be archived online and through other means that the investment company's got to have. So that data is not lost. It's just you're the first line of defense to make sure the trade that you had was executed per your wishes.
Okay, thanks. We did have a call come in, and I still want to get back to you also by the about the proxies and corporate actions. So I want to come back to that as well. But Judy called in off air, and she said, if I did have an IRA and wanted to take a monthly distribution prior to 59, there is a fine. Well, we can talk about that. Is there an exception? When would you be able to take money out without penalty? And in her case, she was taking care of her parents, and she could have used money from her. Is she asking if she could have used money from her IRA without the tax? I was taking care of my parents. Could I have used money from my IRA without the tax? Well, let me start, Matt, and then you can jump in. Judy, taking money out of the IRA, if it's a regular IRA, whenever you take a distribution out, you would... It is income tax reportable, depending on how much other income you have on your tax return, would determine whether it is income taxable to you, like if you end up having an income tax. So let's pretend you took, I'm going to give you an extreme example just to make sure you understand this. If you were under age 59 and a half and you just took $5,000 out of an IRA and you had no other income on your tax return, $5,000 on page one of your return, less your exemption, less your standard deduction, would have zero taxable income. So you're not necessarily going to pay income tax on that. But you would have a 10% penalty for early withdrawal unless you had some kind of exception. If, however, you have $100,000 on your tax return and you take $5,000 out of your IRA, you're going to be in a higher tax bracket, maybe a 25% tax bracket. So you would be subject to income tax on that because it's a withdrawal. So anytime we take distributions out of IRAs, they're going to be subject to income tax unless they're Roth IRAs. So they will be includable in income. Whether or how much they get taxed depends on what other income you have and what tax bracket you're in. The 10% penalty is early withdrawal under age 59 and a half, but there are exceptions. And some of those exceptions depend on what you're doing with the money. But one of the exceptions, when you talked about doing it monthly, there would be an exception called a 72T. Matt, I'm not sure if you've seen this, but it is something that if a client says to you, hey, I'm short on money, I need to do something, the IRA is my only resource. One of the things that is available is the 72T, which stands for an election under the IRS code 72T, where you could do substantially equal periodic distributions. And the trick to this, though, is, Judy, some people think it applies to their entire IRA, but in fact, you could break it up. Did you have any of these at Fidelity when you...
We did it quite frequently, but correct me if I'm wrong, they have to be of 55 and older. Is that correct?
No. With the 72T, I'd have to look that up. I don't know if they have to be 55 or not. I think they could... I'm not aware of a low age. Mm-hmm. I am aware that they can do it as long as it's over their life expectancy. So what happens is they have to do it the longer of 5 years or age 59 and a half.
Okay.
The longer of. So I think if you're, I haven't had one in a while. So
it's rare. I've dealt with them in the past, but I know there's some complex rules and regulations. And you do get in a contract with the IRS. So once you start it, it's...
Exactly.
You're locked in. So once you begin to do that, Judy, you know, you want to be careful. The government's going to require you take it out and you pay the tax, although you're not paying a tax penalty. They want their cut. And
right.
Once you start it, they're going to expect to get that money every year.
Because if you stop it, it's an out of sequence kind of thing, then they're going to go back and want all of it.
They're going to want the tax penalty on top of
that. The tax penalty.
Yeah.
Good point, Matt. Yes. So, Judy, it's just been a while since I've had someone do that, but you can carve it out. If you were to come and say, oh, gosh, I need $100 a month or $200 a month, you could actually kind of carve out a separate account, calculate your life expectancy based on that balance to kind of come up with the dollar amount that you need. So it is a little complicated. It's got to be careful, but it was a great question. So that's one of the exceptions to the penalty. And then what I would say, if you're taking care of your parents and paying for their medical cost or long-term care expenses or nursing care expenses, you may want to look to see if they would qualify as your dependents. And then maybe you could take medical expenses on Schedule A that would help offset that income. It wouldn't necessarily offset the 10% penalty if you weren't doing it under some other exception. Okay? So I hope that helps. Great questions tonight. If you do have them, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And when we come back from our next break, we're going to continue our discussion with Matt Petrozelli. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You're listening to Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert every Wednesday on WDIY, 6 to 7 p.m. Currently 66 degrees out there. Tonight, a 100% chance of showers. Some of the storms could produce gusty winds and heavy rain. We have a low of 59, quite mild. Tomorrow, Thursday, a 30% chance of showers, mainly before 11 a.m., and then in the afternoon, sunny with a high near 71. Thursday night, a low around 40 degrees. For Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 57. Friday night, a low of 34, good sleeping temperature. Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 55, and Saturday night, a low of 43 degrees. So the drippiness is going to end tomorrow at around noon, and then we're going to have sunshine again. And here's the lady who always brings sunshine into the studio, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, John. Hey, folks, thanks for listening tonight. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And they don't have to be on topic. We've already had a couple great questions tonight that I'm glad Matt was here to help with, because that variable life insurance is not my thing. So if you have questions, 610-758-8810. Matt, I want to go to one thing, and then I want to talk about a little bit more about some efficiencies that some folks should think about when they're looking at their investment accounts. You'd mentioned about proxies and corporate actions, and I think it's important to kind of emphasize that. So they would, if whether it's paper or online, they would get an alert. And sometimes people think, oh, it's beyond me, I don't need to pay attention to it. But can we go back for a moment? Because you mentioned, as an example, a corporate action. You said GE just decided to, I believe, spin off one of their businesses. Mm-hmm. But it's going to have an impact on shareholders of GE. Correct. Now, I recall reading that they were going to have the option to take none of the spinoff, some of the spinoff, or all of the spinoff. Mm-hmm. So if someone gets an alert to that, they should really be paying attention, because inaction is action.
Correct.
And what would they do then if they have a question about that kind of decision? And we were talking earlier about low-cost brokers, too. Mm-hmm. So where do they get help if they're trying to make a decision about that action?
Okay, well, that's a great question. You kind of went up there on a few different important topics. Corporate actions and proxies, using GE spinning off Synchrony as an example, if you don't take any action, which most people don't, you just get whatever that option is, which is you don't have any option to take any of the new stock. Most people don't know anything about GE's credit business or their capital business, of which they're spinning off. You can call the 800 number on the corporate action and talk to a representative. They usually have 800 representatives that can walk you through your options, but they're not investment advisors. They're just going to say option A is A and B is B and C is C. So that's kind of what the low-cost firms will do. They'll just send it out to you and expect you to make the decision on that. If you work with a particular investment advisor, broker, or someone who helps you with your investments, they can walk you through the ins and outs of what the value of that spinoff may be, how it's going to impact your portfolio, and all of that type of thing. Remember that if you own stock of a publicly traded company, you have a say and what that company does. Many of us, it's a very small say, but you vote in regards to board of directors, executive compensation, and these corporate actions in regards to spinoffs and certain large decisions that will impact the shareholders. So it's important for people to read those, take action, call the 800 number on the corporate action or proxy if you have questions. And if you work with an investment advisor, they should have access to tools to help you make a better decision on how it's going to impact your portfolio.
Okay, great. Thanks. Folks, if you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. So, Matt, back to, let's talk about some of the features that may be available for someone when they're trying to kind of manage their paperwork and all their different accounts. Quite often, you might have three or four different kinds of accounts with one investment firm.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I don't want five different envelopes. What is an option that some people might not be aware of?
Right. I think one of the biggest frustrations we run into is the topic's called householding. And let's say a husband and a wife each have two accounts, an IRA and a brokerage account. They're going to come in four different envelopes, four different accounts. That means four sets of paper. Or if you're online, when I log in or the wife logs in, they're not going to see each other's accounts. Householding allows families to give permission to other family members to have all of their statements consolidated, all their trade confirmations consolidated, and also online the ability to view and act in a viewing capacity on those accounts that they may not be authorized to see otherwise. Now, typically that's a limited viewing power through householding. So mm-hmm. If my wife has an IRA, I can't just call and make trades in that account or act on that account, but I can see values and consolidate statements for ease of customization and the investment experience. Okay. You would need a power of attorney, which is available through most investment companies if you wanted to act on other family members' accounts.
Do you know if custodial firms have a power of attorney like that that's specific to that investment account versus them having to go to a lawyer and getting a
Great
special
question.
Power of attorney?
Great question. Yes, they do. It's a limited power of attorney designed specifically just for the investment relationship. So what it allows them to do is make trades, withdraw money in the name of the other account holder. You can't make trades and then send money to yourself or to another third party. So viewing rights, trading rights, and withdrawal for the benefit of that account holder is typically what we see as boilerplate with the investment firm. And that's just a form you sign. You don't need to go to an attorney to get that. What you'd get from an attorney would be a full power of attorney in which you can have discretion over any of that person's
financial
capacity,
decisions.
Financial decisions, etc.
Okay, that's good to know, and a lot of people should be aware of it. Because as we were saying last week with Judy, about half the people have their estate planning documents, so
right.
You might think you have to have a power of attorney when, in fact, the custodian may have that for you. So that really helps in those families where maybe one party is the financial person and is kind of taking more power over that.
Right.
You don't have to worry about, you know, giving each other your passwords and being sneaky about it. There is methods to do this. So you mentioned about money, like maybe, you know, the wife might need money, so the husband has this limited power of attorney and sends the check to the wife for $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what might be some options for transferring money? What can people do with that nowadays? Do I have to wait for a check in the mail?
You can wait for a check in the mail if you'd like. That's one of the options. One of the great features that we've seen really come to light over the last 5 years is what we call a money line option or a money link. Investment companies now allow you to link your bank account or even multiple bank accounts, depending on how you bank, directly to your brokerage or investment account. So whenever you need cash, you can move that money free of charge to your bank account, and it typically takes 24 to 48 hours for it to post to your bank. And it's a free, easy way to move money versus having to do like a wire, which there's usually a cost to that and there's risk to that, and there's timing restrictions on how firms do wires and fraud restrictions and things like that. So this money line option is a great way to either move money to your brokerage account, So if you want to save $500 a month or $100 a month, you can have it moved free of charge to your brokerage account. Or if you need to move money, it can come the other way. That's a huge enhancement. Additionally, for people who like to receive their dividends for stocks, or if they own bond or bond-related investments and they want their interest paid to them, that can be swept through a money line feature. So for a lot of our clients who are currently taking income from their portfolios, that's a huge feature. They don't have to go in every month and say, how much cash do I have? Anytime a dividend's paid or a coupon's paid on a bond, it immediately gets swept into their checking account, and they can use that for their living expenses.
And you don't have to have signed up for online access or features like that to get these kinds of features.
Correct. It's easy to manage them online, but you don't need to be online savvy to have them. They're just forms that you can fill out paper-wise, and you'll see those money line transactions on your monthly statement if you're completely paper, so you can keep track of what's been coming out of your portfolio.
And if people have online access, they may be able to transact those transfers or sweeps online. Or if they don't have online access, you make a call to your investment advisor or the custodian and say, please move this.
Absolutely.
If there's standing instructions that have already been completed, right?
Correct.
But there is so much, carefulness about like wire transfers, for example. So maybe just give a little caution to folks out there who are listening who may be nervous about something like that.
Right.
People can't just send money out of your account to anywhere. So what kinds of steps do we see some of the custodians taking for wire transfers to protect people?
Yeah, wire transfers are a hot button issue in our industry because we're seeing a lot of fraud there. If a client signs off on a wire transfer, once that money leaves the account, it can go to a third party as long as it's authorized, and then that money leaves the account. And once that's wired through the Fed wire system, it's gone. So you need to be really careful about that. Most firms have procedures in place. It's usually some sort of verification. I know our firm does not accept wire instructions over the phone. We require the client come in with their ID, sign. We make sure that is the client. Sometimes it's a hot button issue. The clients say, oh, well, you know me, we've worked together. It's just that the risk of that is not worth taking. With the money line, it can only go to that one account, which is already established. So there's no fraud that can possibly happen.
Right.
Wires you need to be very careful with. And if you need to send a wire from your investment account, I recommend making adequate time to go see your investment advisor or work with a company that can help you, because it may take time to be verified for that wire to go out. And there are time cutoffs too. Don't wait till 3:59 to try to send a wire. It may not go out that day.
Right, because you and your investment advisor may have thought that you put it in timely, but the custodian may have their own questions.
That's correct.
And bounce that back. So you also have to make sure that you're kind of available as
right.
well. I want to talk about a lot of the upcoming the technology using mobile apps and things like that. But first, let me just go back to mentioning signatures and signing things. People are still signing applications, but we are hearing about e-signatures more and more.
Mm-hmm.
Are we seeing that kind of coming around in the custodial world?
That's becoming a lot more mainstream. We all talk about the paperless society, but our industry requires so much paperwork in regards to opening accounts based on, you know, Patriot Act laws and FINRA and SEC regulations. There are new systems coming out where e-documents can be securely emailed to prospects and clients, and all they have to do is click a button to verify that they've read the form, and it acts in the same capacity as a signature. There's some passcodes and verification and logins. They all need to go through third-party logins. So there's some detail. If you're not tech savvy, it's probably going to be very difficult for you to operate in that environment. But if you're very comfortable working on the internet and in the electronic environment, it's a great way to reduce paper trips to the office, mailing forms, worrying about, you know, somebody intercepting something. It's a very secure way to do things because it's not done via email. It's done through a third-party secure login.
You know, it's interesting that you actually mentioned that, because so often I think people worry about their exposure in this the technological world, online, on, you know, doing things on their computer, but they're just as exposed with their mailbox. And we forget this,
too. I mean,
there's exposure there as well. Folks, if you have questions, there's still time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Forgot that last part. 610-758-8810. If you have questions, we can take questions on our topic this evening or off topic, whatever is most comfortable for you. When we come back, we're going to talk about what else we're seeing on the technology side, like just taking a picture of your check for a deposit. If you haven't heard of it, it's here. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
And we are back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I have with me this evening Matt Petrozelli, Executive VP, Financial Advisor, and COO of Valley National Financial Advisors. We're talking about all the new bells and whistles that are out there in the investment world as far as just operating your accounts, doing the day-to-day bookkeeping, keeping those papers, looking at your prospectuses and your proxies and your trade confirmations. Is it time to revisit what you've been doing? Is it time to revisit the cost of what you're doing? Is it time to household maybe accounts and just kind of get a fresh look? So that's what we're talking about. But now, Matt, oh, if you have the questions still, we have time. 610-758-8810. So, Matt, let's talk about the mobile app. What's going on for folks who are tech savvy and want to jump on board and Give your experience, for example, that we were just talking about earlier. That how often do you go on the computer to do your investment management?
Never. And I use mobile apps for everything that I do because it's faster and it's right on my phone. It's right in my hand. I can do it wherever I have an internet connection. They're all third-party secure, portals to directly to the custodian, so it's very safe and secure. Some of the great things about mobile apps is it really allows you to do almost anything you need to do. I can deposit checks.
Mm-hmm.
I can move money as long as I have my money line or my link set up. I can place trades. I can view transaction history and trade confirms. So almost anything that you would do online, I can do through the mobile app and more. And it's very convenient and I'm surprised. I'm not a huge early adopter in everything in my life, and that was something that I use frequently. It's been very great.
So talk about the depositing the checks, mm-hmm. because I think that, it's been around for a little while,
right?
At least a couple years. I know my kids, when Sally got married, mm-hmm. they got all their wedding gifts.
Sure.
I found a stack of checks on the dresser, and I was like, oh my gosh, what did the kids have all these checks from the wedding? And they didn't do anything with them.
Right.
Well, Corey, my son-in-law in this industry as well, wrote on the back e-deposit or something like that. So then I asked, well, what did you do? Well, he took pictures. This was a couple years ago. Took pictures and deposited his check.
It's
you just
amazing.
Taking a picture of the front of the check with your phone.
Usually the front and the back.
Front and the back. Because you have to have endorsements.
And then you verify the amount, and then it uploads and just like a check scanner would work at a bank, or the technology now is available through your phone. So they're taking the check scanner out of the equation because the information is clear enough now with these high-resolution cameras that they can upload them directly.
Okay, but then they give you the opportunity to verify the amount. So that's kind of like a little double check.
There's like a 3-step process it goes through: picture, verification, amount.
Okay, and you said that you could do trades. Mm-hmm. What about like reviewing your account to see how you're allocated? Are there rebalancing tools on the apps, or do you still have to do that like with, you know, online?
Yeah, in regards to rebalancing, that's a larger concept. You can certainly place trades on the apps, but there aren't many portfolio rebalancing tools or large allocation tools on the app. Those are still mainly driven through the custodian websites or through the investment advisors.
Well, let's talk about that then for a minute. Let's talk about the technology available to investment advisors that may not be available at the individual level.
Right.
The research and all of that.
So I think there's a few big things coming out that we've seen on our side of the fence as advisors and as an investment advisor company. The first one is client portals. We're seeing more and more third-party secure client portals that are available.
Tell people what a client portal is for people who haven't heard of it.
A client portal is a view that you can see all of your accounts, all of your account data, your asset allocation, your performance data, your transaction data, through a one portal that is customized by your advisor. Okay, it's not customized by Schwab or Fidelity. It's customized by your advisor. So it's very personal to you, and you can see what you want to see. Additionally, there's a third-party client vault. So very similar, we're talking about e-documents. Rather than me emailing a confidential document to a client, I can upload it to their portal or to their vault, and then they log in and pull that down. And it never travels through the normal email channels, which makes it very secure if there's account numbers or social security numbers or whatever are on that form. So that's a huge new process that's coming out. And most firms are just starting to get on board with that. It's very new. You know, the second one is these rebalancing tools that we talked about. Many advisors are managing multiple accounts and multiple portfolios with multiple investment objectives. How do you trade across three different accounts to maintain a certain asset allocation or a certain allocation in one stock or one investment? These new algorithmic trading tools basically allow us to slice and dice all of these multiple accounts across multiple custodians, trade with ease, trade with less error, and get more accurate prices for our clients. And I can't tell you how important that is and how that gives us an edge over just trying to do it by account by account by account.
So you just said something important that you said it could be multiple custodians.
That's true.
So you could be managing money for folks who might have accounts at a couple different places.
Correct.
That they wouldn't necessarily be able to aggregate on their own. And this client portal rebalancing tools that's available with the technology you have allows you to aggregate those accounts and then look at their asset allocation across all the different accounts.
Sure. It really gives the client a view of what the advisor sees on the inside, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. And what about those documents then are out on this portal or vault, as you called it, and where is that stored?
Great question. It's most of these are stored out on what we call the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
If we think about how data is normally stored, it's usually stored in a big computer tower in someone's office, which is, you know, available for hacking and damage. And most people are going out onto the cloud now, which are secure servers and third-party locations. And that backs up and kind of runs all of our data. It keeps it secure. It keeps it scalable. It keeps it fast.
Mm-hmm.
And the client portal documents are stored and backed up there.
Okay. Now, you never take clients' passwords or anything like that.
No.
There's something we hear people talk about, and I've had people ask me the question, do you take custody of my assets?
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain what that means and what that implies?
That's extremely important. You want to work with an advisor or a firm that uses a third-party custodian. You want to make sure that your assets are always held at arm's length from you know, anybody who can physically get their hands on it. My good example is Bernie Madoff did not use a third-party custodian, right? He mocked using a third-party custodian, but in the end, he was holding the funds, and it gave him authority to transact them in his name. A third-party custodian, the advisor can only transact on the client's behalf and withdraw money for benefit of the client or unless the client signs off otherwise for the funds to be used to a third party other than themselves. That's really important. Also, if the investment advisor, firm, or company would run into trouble or financial trouble, your assets are completely held separate from the investment company. So that safeguards the value of your assets. The SEC says if we have access to client passwords, we could be taking custody because then we can act and touch the money as if we're the client. And that is something we want to avoid.
Right. And I know that at one point there was some question as to doing certain trading, like for assets held away, what rights, you know, just like a husband can give a limited power of attorney to a wife or a wife to a husband to look at accounts. Individuals could actually give a limited power of attorney to an advisor to
Correct.
Help. You don't want to give them a password that would give them permission to change your address or have you move or send money to that third
Right.
party. So there could be a limited capacity that an investment advisor would have, which is the reason then you can take a number of accounts and aggregate them.
Correct.
Right? Because you're kind of transacting.
Limited power of attorney allows the advisor to make trades, view the account and view transaction data, and withdraw money for the benefit of the client only.
Okay.
Those three things, anything more than that, the ability to change addresses, the ability to withdraw money for somebody else's benefit, that would be taking custody.
Constitute custody.
Yes.
Yeah, so you want to be careful if you're ever in those situations. Matt, we have a couple minutes left. Can you explain the difference between discretionary authority versus non-discretion?
Sure. Discretionary authority is where the client gives an advisor or an entity the sole discretion, or it's up to the advisor's choice on when to trade, what to buy, what to sell, and when to act on that. They do not need to confirm that with the client. So they are acting in the best interest of the client based on their expertise and their agreement, and there's usually there's compensation for that discretion. Non-discretion is the broker or the investment company would either act in an unsolicited capacity, which is you go online and you make a trade and somebody's transacting that on your behalf. They're doing it because it's unsolicited. You're telling them to do that. Or someone's proactively soliciting an action on your behalf. So I would call you, Lori, and say, hey, you really need to change this in your portfolio. Do you give me permission to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And unless you say yes, I can't process that transaction. So discretionary gives the advisor or the firm flexibility of when and what to buy. Non-discretionary, it either needs to be confirmed by the client first or it's an unsolicited transaction processed by the client.
And real quick, one of the reasons discretion may be beneficial is things can happen so fast in the markets
Sure.
today. And if the market's tanking, you may have wanted your advisor to act, but if you couldn't get in touch with them or
Sure.
your advisor couldn't get in touch with you because you were on the Bahamas or something, that's the little bit of a safeguard that the discretion gives. Matt, we didn't have time to talk about robo-advisors. We were going to see if we could touch on that, but I don't think we're going to get there tonight. Any other kinds of last-minute tips you can give people or comments about kind of paying attention to what's going on in their options for managing their investment accounts?
I think people need to do the research, educate themselves on what's available to them, especially if they've been with a firm for a very long time. There's got to be new features that they need to be aware of, they need to look at. And investing is a customizable user experience. Once you choose to invest with an advisor or with a firm, where you bear fruit is post that transactional relationship. It's the years beyond that. So make sure that you set up your investing style and your customizable options to benefit you so you have an enjoyable investing experience. Investing should be enjoyable, it should be profitable, and it should be an education experience at the same time. So make sure that you set yourself up for success and not frustration. I see too much frustration for people years after years, never get what they're doing. Set it up so you can understand and you can enjoy the experience.
And then possibly even have a relationship with your investment advisor so they understand you beyond just the investments.
Absolutely.
Okay, Matt, thank you so much for being here this evening. That's Matt Petrozelli, Senior VP or Executive VP, COO, and Financial Advisor at Valley National Financial Advisors. Matt, if people want to reach you, what phone number do they call?
610-868-9000, extension 105.
610-868-9000, extension 105. Thanks for being here. Next week, we have Valerie Lane, President of the United Way of the Greater Lehigh Valley's Women's Leadership Council, and Marcy Ronald, Executive Vice President of United Way of the Greater Lehigh Valley, and we'll discuss making a difference in the community financially and progressively. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, callers. Coming up next, Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.